enthusiasts and the people who love them.
Hello, my friends. This is Mickey Desai, your host and producer of The Thing About Cars. I've got a very exciting announcement for you. You may remember that special conversation we had with Warren Jobs. He's the CEO of Sealskin Covers. Well, guess what? We're going to actually give away a Sealskin cover to one lucky listener of The Thing About Cars. At the end of this episode, I'll tell you how to enter to win the Sealskin cover. In the meantime, I hope you enjoy this episode of The Thing About Cars. Hello and welcome back. This is Mickey, one of your hosts for The Thing About Cars. Around the table, we've got
Becca,
Ronnie,
Ben.
We've got an interesting agenda in front of us today. It's sort of a rainy day here in Atlanta, Georgia. Recording, as always, in Strongbox West. I'm sort of obligated to say that. Thank you, Strongbox West. We're going to start this show with our trivia segment, which I think we're going to change the name. It used to be Jalopy Joust, and I'm kind of liking Grand Trivia Auto. So let's do that, like until Rockstar sends us a cease and desist.
Right.
And so our Grand Trivia Auto segment for today, the question is, what car had the first electric starter?
Oh.
I'm sure many of you may know this already, but what car had the first electric starter? Was it Ford, Cadillac, Bugatti, or Hudson? And think about that. Mm. We'll give the answer before the end of the show. So was it Ford, Cadillac, Bugatti, or Hudson? Got it?
Got it.
All right.
Ben, on the board, you wrote Lotus Update! What's the Lotus Update?
Well, it's a long overdue update, but the suspension is all done. So that's been, well, except for some of the adjustment, but I've got to get the rest of the car together enough to then have the weight correct that I can put two people inside it, then crawl around underneath while I adjust the ride height. But the installation's done.
Fantastic.
So all those components are finally in. It took a long time and a lot of just kind of hair pulling and figuring out, you know, next steps I didn't need, plus the braking system is trailing behind that. It's in a close second place right now. Had a little plumbing issue with the master cylinder, but that's in progress.
Not that one that was so hard to get.
Well, it had some leaks, one from one of the seals inside and one at one of the connections. And of course, these are on brake lines that I made and flared myself, the first ones I'd ever done. Three of my four flares were fine, but the one just wasn't working.
Three out of four ain't bad.
No, it's not.
So you had to redo it.
Yeah, and that's in progress yet. I think I'm going to get a pro to do I had to rebend this piece of pipe completely from new because I couldn't just reflare the old one. I tried cutting just the flare off, but those tools you borrow from the auto parts store are a little crude and they just weren't
substandard.
Yeah, they weren't quite getting it. So I'm going to have a shop do the flare on this new brake line just to eliminate all doubt.
So with all the hair pulling around the suspension, what was the hardest part and what was the turning point?
Well, part of it was figuring out what I needed because it seemed like the ride height was incorrect.
Yeah, I remember you saying that.
Right. And so consulting people in forums and such, guys who'd been there and done that, figuring out what to get. And then part of it was how to install it. Because I'm kind of looking at the new parts and the old parts and going, there are a few things that are different here. And do I need these rubber bump stops? Do I need these aluminum spacers? And again, consulting the wisdom of the been there, done that set and figuring out what I did and didn't need. And then I said, well, then somebody said, well, check the installation sheet. And I said, what installation sheet? And then, so then somebody sent that to me, said, yeah, this was supposed to be in the box with that stuff.
Right.
He bought from them too. And then, you know, just kind of dealing with the springs. That's an area where amateurs can get in trouble quickly because of the force in springs.
Right. What ended up being the correction for the ride height?
I've got an adjustable ride height suspension now.
Okay.
So is it a ground control kit?
I have no idea what that is.
Oh, okay. Never mind then.
For that era of Lotus, I guess, maybe. But
basically just coilovers that have threads with collars that the springs sit on.
Well, ground control is a manufacturer. Usually they have slip-on style coilover setups.
Never heard of them. This came from a company in Britain called Tony Thompson Racing.
Sounds very appropriately British.
Yeah, I don't know if they make this stuff or somebody else does for them, which is probably the latter, but they they're kind of the go-to for doing this kind of thing with old Lotuses. They've raced a few Elans, and they've got all kinds of cool bits you can put on those older ones.
So continuing forward with the plan, the next step is finish the brakes, and then what?
Well, I've already kind of started on the next step because everything overlaps.
Sure.
I've been trying to get the interior a little more back together, And a big item there, y'all might remember Famous Frank, who we had on microphone some months ago.
Frank was a guest some months ago, yeah.
Yeah, he said that he's in one of his businesses is interior components for old Lotus cars.
Mm-hmm.
Well, because the Plus 2 is a little rare. There aren't that many of them around. That's the model I've got. They're especially rare on this side of the ocean. He wanted to make a reproduction center console for Plus 2s. And so here I am in the same city, and my interior just happens to be taken apart. So I loaned him my center console, and this is a big piece of vacuum-formed ABS plastic.
Right.
It's about 5-6 feet long, but it's made of thin ABS plastic that's, you know, just vacuum-formed over a mold.
Right.
Fairly simple in theory, but apparently not that easy to produce because of its size. But he took mine. He sent that to a mold maker who took a long, long time to get it all right. But he's got these things ready now. He brought me the number one off the mold a couple weeks ago and said, here, have it. And it looks beautiful. I can't believe that the mold was made for my console because it looks so much straighter and neater and nice. Not that mine was in bad shape, but, you know, just the 50 years of age kind of show on it.
Right. It amazes me, though, that especially with the rarity of that car on this side of the pond,
right,
that you would go through all the trouble to get manufacturing for that particular part done. Like, how much demand can there be for that?
He's probably going to send more of them to the UK than he'll sell here.
Yeah.
There are significantly more of them over there. And there's some of them in continental Europe and places like that as well.
I mean, it's a 50-year-old car, right? I mean,
right.
Yeah.
I think there's about 1,100 plus twos believed to be still on the road. Out of probably 5,000 made. So yeah, I got that new center console, which I may just save. I may tuck that away and keep for later and put my old one back in. I haven't decided yet. Use the old one till I can't or something. I just got the defroster vents back from the powder coat shop. I learned the hard way that the black wrinkle finish paint from a rattle can is not a good idea. It just doesn't work that well. I tried and tried and tried, but I couldn't get it to look right, so... Take these little defroster vents to
a powder coater,
local powder coater, and up in Gwinnett where I live. And oh man, they look good. Worth the money. Worth the money to have a pro do that.
So I have to ask the ubiquitous question: is what's your timeline for getting it back on the road?
Well, it keeps shifting due to all the setbacks, but currently by September.
Right. I mean, life gets in the way, and we all know how that goes, but yeah. September.
Okay. And it'll be a primitive back on the road, but
sure.
It'll be operable. I want to take it to the British Car Fair.
Ah.
I'm about to try. Maybe this weekend I may try to get some of the glass back in.
All right, very cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Call her if you need some help.
Absolutely.
I promise not to drop and break anything. But there's some other news from Lotus.
Yes, there is. They just unveiled a few days ago this new really, really top-end, what people like to call a hypercar or a halo car, something that we can all only dream about.
It looked really slick.
They've been kind of teasing it for a while, and then they finally showed us the other day what's under the sheet. And when I was seeing the teases, it looked like the thing was going to be called Evija, E-V-I-J-A, and I said, that's a stupid name. And it keeps in with the tradition they've been running since the 50s of giving their cars names that start with E, but apparently it's pronounced Evija.
Evija.
But that's not intuitive, so
right.
Raspberries to the naming committee there. But this thing is pretty slick. It's hard to describe in words. I think it's a little derivative because everybody's saying, oh, well, that part looks like a McLaren, that part looks like a Ford GT, things like that. But it's all electric. It's fully electric. It's supposed to be able to get to 189 miles an hour in sub-8 seconds or something, 0 to 60 in 2 seconds or something like that. And jeez. It's going to cost, in the United States, about $2.1 million and only 130 will be produced.
Oh, my God. Mm. It's a shame.
So, in that kind of fantasy land, I kind of have a hard time caring.
Yeah. Well, I admire that. You say you have a hard time caring, and I have a hard time getting over my frustration of how am I ever going to afford anything like that.
Well, look at it this way. If you can afford something halfway like that, if you can afford something a tenth of the way like that.
Yes. A $200,000 car would be great.
Sure. But the upside of it is, too, that some of this stuff is eventually going to filter down into other products, things that are more down to earth.
Very exciting. Have you guys seen it yet? The pictures of Ben's this discovery?
No.
No.
Evija?
Mm-mm.
We'll have to check that out.
It's pretty far out. The whole Lotus community is kind of a buzz of talking about it.
Right.
Oh, it looks pretty gnarly. I just pulled it up on the Googles.
Mm-hmm.
The Googles. The Google machine.
Yeah, the Googleables are... It's a gnarly looking thing.
Okay, I see what you're talking about with this part comes from McLaren. And,
right.
Geez, there's almost Dodge-ish
there. I have a hard time with that. This part comes from McLaren, this part comes from something else. I mean, the minute you start looking at any supercar, there are going to be certain baseline similarities that start to erupt, right? The physics just lends itself to that.
Right.
So the joke I gave all those people was, so you're saying it's derivative.
Right, yes.
But look too at like jet airliners. They all kind of look the same, and there's a reason for that. Because, you know, decades of distillation of the engineering, they've boiled it down to the basic package that works.
Right.
Yeah. A lot of it still looks very prototype-y.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I can't see it being mainline construction or being in full production as it is per the Googles. Most interesting.
Oh, you lost me at the doors. I know so many of them do that, but still.
Yeah. There's kind of an engineering reason for that because the body's a little side pod like, and it's kind of the only way you can really practically open doors with that.
Well, not just that. I mean, if you were to do side opening doors, you would have a very slim window to get into. Not including the window. I'd say the most interesting.
Oh, the green one's cute.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if that's it.
No, I don't think that's it.
I think that's a 3D render of a prototype. The most interesting concept about this is where the side ducts go. So typically on most supercars and exotic cars, the side ducting goes into the engine bay to force feed the rear mounted engine or mid mounted engine for the intake or for brake ducting or something along those lines. Or sometimes there's radiators in there, intercoolers for turbo vehicles. The ducting that's right behind the doors on this one goes straight through and over the body, kind of on the Mercedes Biome prototype, if anyone's familiar with that. Air channels through the duct and then just over what appears to be a fiberglass fender. And then the air shoots in between the taillight. Like, the taillight is a big circle of sorts. It's not circular, but it's round.
It's like... Take the Dodge taillights and squish them in the middle and ish.
Well, then
why do they port it like that?
And the way it goes kind of between the body and the rear wheel with a little piece above like that, I think that's where people are seeing the Ford GT thing.
Yeah. So this whole channel here is aero purpose. It's all aerodynamic. So the top. So instead of having an additional spoiler, the body of the car kind of acts as a spoiler. And you can also kind of see that
that's
it does.
Cool.
Have an additional retractable spoiler. Those two little silver dots in the middle at the top are probably...
You get a little bit of a frontal area reduction, too.
Yeah, so. So it's very clever in its design in that sense, but I don't know how the NHTSA and DOT will respond to this design.
That's probably not the real final one either, though, so...
Yeah.
We'll see.
It'll be a while before we see one on the street here.
Right. It's not bad. It's not bad. The sides would... take a while for me to get used to, but other than that, it's cute.
Well, I'm excited to see Lotus is still in the game producing stuff like this. I wonder if this is a result of the Geely
absolutely
influx. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, the amount of money coming in, you know, makes things possible.
Yep.
You know, if you don't have any money, you can't do much.
Well, can anybody come into the market these days and bootstrap their way into success with something like automobile production? I mean,
well, you could be like DeLorean and just sell drugs, just don't get caught.
Speaking of which, no, I'm not going to sell any drugs. No.
Yet.
Never going to happen. So what else do we have on the board? Becca, you got anything?
I know I was kind of tinkering around with the notion of asking for input on, I don't know, just little modifications for the Jeep to pep it up a little bit. I know there's concepts that work on just about any vehicle, but I don't know. I didn't know if
anybody... You want to make it faster? It's a Jeep.
Of course.
I mean, it's...
Well, exactly.
Right.
Exactly. But, and Eric always yells at me about this, I drive everything like it's a Mustang. That poor Jeep. And actually, though, I have to give big kudos to it. It's putting up with my BS.
It's a Liberty, right?
It's a Liberty.
All right. 2012?
Wow. I just had a brain fart on my own car. It's an 07.
07.
It's a KJ.
Right.
So, yeah, something I need to do. I would love to do adjustable ride height so that there's, you know, off-road and on-road. And but yeah, I would love to pep it up a little bit.
I will say about off-road suspension, or not off-road suspension, but adjustable suspension isn't as easily adjustable as...
No, I know that. And yeah. And the stupid thing that's crossed my brain, remember the old cars that they had the hydraulic and they could make them bounce up and down?
That's still a big thing out in California.
Huge, low riders, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right, but use some system...
You could put it on bags and have a hydraulic leveling system. Yeah.
Well, somebody out there has got to have already thought of that, I'm assuming.
But it's a Liberty, right? It's not meant to be the same rugged piece of rock crawling hardware that the Wrangler is or anything like that.
Right. The wheel wells are different. Yeah. I mean, mine is still a 4x4, but it's
basically car-based unibody, you know, kind of thing.
Right.
Now, there are people that have modified theirs. There's plenty of pictures of people taking their Liberty out rock crawling, and it's...
It can be done, yeah.
Yeah, the drivetrain is the same. I'm assuming it's just the original suspension and clearance that causes any issue.
So what was Ronnie's checklist on prioritizing modifications to your car? Get your brakes done first, get your suspension done next, then worry about the engine?
Start in the back, start at the lowest point possible. Work your way up and forward. Brakes first, handling second, power third. Actually, chassis in general. It kind of ties in with suspension third. Power is last.
Well, I don't think I really need to upgrade the braking system. It's not like I'm actually going to drop a Mustang engine in there for my upgrade. I think it's fully capable of handling any added pep to it. As far as the suspension, I'm not entirely sure what's available out there.
I'm not either. I just think you should put it on bags and put like big booming bass subwoofer in the back and neon lights all the way around.
Yeah. Have like the bazooka subwoofers just blasting out the rear windows.
Well, actually, a lot of Jeeps are doing the underlight, but they're rock lights. So when you go rock crawling in the dark.
Yes.
But whatever you do, do not get one of those Angry Eyes grills.
Oh, my God. No.
They don't sell them for the Liberty, but
I'm sure somebody does.
I can actually cheaply make one.
Don't.
You don't like Angry Eyes?
It's such a cliche. It was an immediate cliche.
Yeah.
Why?
Why?
I think it's funny.
I thought it used to be cool. But that was like once upon a time. Now it's like, it just doesn't really serve any purpose.
It's better than the eyelashes that everybody's driving around with.
I will agree with that.
Those things drive me nuts.
I kind of feel like that's two sides of the same coin. You know, once like you really think about it, it's like, you know, do you wear blue or do you wear pink? Or do you have angry eyes or do you have eyelashes?
I'm violating my own rule here. My own rule is never judge anyone else for their sense of style. Right. Because they may do something to their car that makes me go, why would you do that to a perfectly good car? But if they love it, more power to them, right? So technically, yes, if you love the angry eyes and if that makes you happy, you should do it.
When it gets so incredibly overdone.
Yes.
You know, yeah. It's kind of like a few years ago, every trucker out there had the Tasmanian Devil teeth grill cover on his rig.
Right.
I was like, come on, really?
Which I can actually do that to a Jeep pretty
easily.
You
could
do
that, yeah.
Yeah. But I've only seen the angry eyes on Jeeps, and it's not on every Jeep out there. So I would say as far as the grand scheme, you know, the eyelashes, you can stick them on any car. So have you seen angry eyes on anything other than
I have not.
A Wrangler?
No. Yeah, it was a big, it's a big Volkswagen thing also.
The angry eyes?
Really? I haven't seen it on a Volkswagen.
Yeah, there's two different ways to do it. Actually, 350Zs do it as well. 350Zs have like just an insert that you can tape onto the headlights. But the Volkswagen community, they have different hoods that mold over to the headlights. So you pop open the hood and headlights look normal, close it, and all of a sudden it's angry.
Well, I have perfectly round headlights, kind of like, you know, Jeeps. And me just being silly, that the weird things that cross my mind, I've thought about having these little eyelids that are actually on like a little motor. So you can make it angry when somebody cuts you off, and then you can make it look sleepy, or you can change them around.
Look up the BMW Gina concept, G-I-N-A. That was a car that this is just a concept.
I remember this.
It's not something you can bolt onto your own car, but the entire body of the thing was made of a flexible skin that had servos underneath that could make it move, and its headlights could wink. But, you know, for round headlights, the angriest looking car ever made had perfectly round headlights. That was the 1959 Dodge. Look it up. Listeners, look this up online.
The 1959 Dodge. Is that the one they made Christine out of?
No. That was a 58 Plymouth Fury.
I see.
Very good.
This thing?
Yeah, that's one pissed off car.
Yeah, I believe that's it right there. And now imagine that as a police car bearing down on you.
Yeah, I mean, it's got like built in angry eyebrows.
Yep. I see what you mean.
Yep.
By, I don't know. It looks like Bender almost, though. Bender. For anybody who watches Futurama.
Yeah.
Bender is an angry car. All right, we're running out of time. Shall we do our grand auto? Grand Trivia Auto.
Wrap that up
and call it a day?
Sure.
Great. All right. So the question was, what car had the first electric starter? Was it the Hudson, a Bugatti, Cadillac, or Ford?
Well, Ford hasn't been first to do anything since the assembly line. I'm just saying.
Yeah, that's true. I think that's true.
I just am not a big GM fan after my experience. Hudson seems both out of place and not.
Mm-hmm.
But Bugatti, because you know how I feel about the word Bugatti.
Bugatti. Bronnie, what's your guess?
If I had to guess, this was probably, well, of course, it's mid-1900s invention. I'm going to try and give it to Cadillac.
Okay.
I don't know why. I honestly, I'm horrible at this trivia. So
giving props to it. Well, I think I'm leaning towards Hudson.
You're leaning
I think.
I kind of am,
final
too.
Answer, Becca? Final.
Yes, Hudson.
Hudson.
Yeah, I'm leaning that way as well. I'm definitely ruling Ford out because I remember reading about this. Mm-hmm. You know, it was one of these things that Henry Ford kind of resisted along with safety glass and other things that the Chevy already had.
Right.
Bugatti, well, I mean, you know, but when electric legs were, electric legs, that shows I'm a motorcyclist. When electric starters were coming out, they weren't even really on the map yet. They were just building scrappy little race cars. And so I'm kind of thinking Hudson.
Hudson, all right.
Yeah, it's kind of they've kind of been an outlier. They've done a lot of kind of different things. So,
the answer is Cadillac.
Oh my
Yay,
God,
Ronnie!
I awesome. Think this is like my second one out of 30. Holy smokes,
Ronnie got it. So here's the answer. It's kind of a longish answer. Bear with me here. And this is via David Burnell, who wrote it up on some blog site, I think. Until Charles Kettering invented the electric starter, you could die starting a car. In early 1908, a woman stalled her Cadillac in Detroit, Michigan. She did not have enough strength to crank the engine to restart it. A passing motorist offered to help. His name was Byron Carter, and he just happened to be a friend of Cadillac founder Henry Leland. So Carter cranked that Cadillac's motor. It backfired. The crank hit him in the face, breaking his jaw.
Ow.
Carter was then admitted to a hospital, but an infection and gangrene set in, and in those days, without antibiotics, he died.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Carter's death led Leland to vow that Cadillac would rid its cars of the hand starter crank. And so he called on Charles Kettering, who owned, get this, Dayton Engineering Laboratories Company. You and I better know it by its acronym, Delco.
Yep.
In 1911, awesome. Charles Kettering with Henry Leland invented and filed U.S. patent 1,150,523. That'll be on a pop quiz later. they filed a patent for an electric starter in America. Kettering had replaced the hand crank on NCR's cash registers with electric motor already. He had already done it on cash registers. So the device was tested in 1911 and introduced in Cadillac's 1912 models. Within 5 years, self-starters would become standard on every single automobile produced.
And to give you some idea how ready the market was for this, remember I mentioned that Henry Ford had resisted such innovations.
Mm-hmm.
The Model T was probably the most accessorized car in history. There were big, thick catalogs of stuff you could get for Model Ts. And the best-selling accessory ever for the Model T was a little clutch you could put on the crank to keep it from popping back on you.
Interesting.
In fact, there's a whole technique for how to crank those old cars. You never wrap your thumb around the handle because if it kicks back, it'll break your thumb.
You're gonna break your thumb.
Better than breaking your jaw and getting gangrene, I think.
There's also a certain way to stand so you get the most torque on it and things like that. But the guy who invented that little crank clutch for the Model T made millions.
So here's my stupid question of the day is, if I go to a car show and I see a Model T, how come those guys aren't hand cranking their Model Ts?
Because a lot of them did get retrofitted with electric starters eventually. A lot of things got retrofitted on Ts. Back in the 80s, I visited the Henry Ford Museum in Greenfield Village out back, which is like a little recreation of Henry Ford's hometown, and they give rides around in Model Ts. Mm-hmm. And I was asking about them, and the guy driving said, oh, yeah, these have been retrofitted with a starter and with a water pump. That was something they didn't originally have.
Mm-hmm.
because they run them all day at low speed.
Right.
Fuel pumps are something T's didn't have either. That was a popular retrofit.
Right.
Mm-hmm. All kinds of things like that. They were primitive cars, and so
sure, absolutely
keep using them. They adapt them to make them work better.
Can we do an LS swap on a Model T?
Oh, God.
Why wouldn't we? LS swap everything.
You'd need to swap the whole rest of the powertrain to keep it from exploding in the driveway, but
everything
sure,
shatter.
Go for it, yeah.
Just one rev, the whole car just...
Right.
Just revving it would make the whole thing lean from the torque reaction.
The whole torque, you'd be on two wheels just from torque. So that's it for today's episode of The Thing About Cars. Thank you to our listeners for listening to us and for supporting us on Patreon, where we're working on putting up some interesting reward levels for you. And if you have a suggestion for us or think we should do the Patreon thing a little differently, please give us a buzz on our Facebook page at The Thing About Cars or our website, thethingaboutcars.com. As always, we love you guys, and we'll look forward to joining you again in about a week.
Bye.
All right, so this is how you win the Sealskin cover, courtesy of the Sealskin Covers Company. Go to the Thing About Cars website. That's thethingaboutcars.com. There you should find a link to a blog post entitled, "We're Giving Away a Sealskin Cover." There you'll find a link to a form which you can use to enter. It doesn't matter what you drive or where you live. All you have to do is give us a name and a valid email address via that form. And while you're at it, we always appreciate your feedback about the show. One lucky listener will be selected at random to win their very own Sealskin cover, courtesy of Warren Jobs and the Sealskin Covers Company. Thanks, as always, for being a part of the Thing About Cars family. We'll see you soon.
Thank you for listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road.